Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Will T, myself, Wally. What's good, bruh?
Nothing much, man. How you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm good, man. I think we were talking about it before the show, before we hit showtime. Man, NBA offseason is amazing, man. It's like amazing. Everything going on in the NBA offseason.
I mean, yeah, it is. I think it's a culmination of a couple things. I think it's one, you know, there really isn't anything exciting from a sports perspective.
Yeah.
And then also, the NBA has done a great job on capitalizing of, you know, right after the NBA Finals, like a week later, then you have the NBA Awards,
yeah.
Then you have the NBA Draft, mm-hmm. Then you have free agency, then you have Summer League. So, yeah. And then, you know, towards the end of August, we'll have the basketball, the FIBA.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You know, so the NBA has done a great job of just capitalizing on the summer, these empty months of the summer, yeah. And pretty much dominating, taking over the storylines of sports.
They're doing something the NFL has been doing for years, right? They're like taking over their dead period, like that dead period of the offseason.
I told you this would happen a long time ago.
That's true. You did say that. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Google Play. Search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Join me on Sunday, August 4th at Bowie Bay Sox Stadium for the first annual celebrity kickball game in honor of my close homie, Barry Sharp, B Sharp, and all affected by mental illness and suicide. This game will include former NFL players Santana Moss, D. Bolton, and Vasante Shanko. The kickball game will be after the Bowie Bay Sox game. The Bowie Bay Sox game is at 1:35. You can buy your tickets at www.groupmaticsevents.com/event/Lawrence Law. Lawrence Law is spelled LAURYNSLAW. Will T.
Let's get into our tradition of pregame.
All right, here are our topics. We'll have Truth About It's Washington Wizards insider Troy Halliburton to join us to discuss the Washington Wizards transactions and Summer League at 8:20. We'll talk about the MLB All-Star Game and Anthony Rendon not playing. At 8:30, we'll talk about the surging Washington Nationals. Finally, at 8:40, host of the Quarterly Report podcast, Armon Lee, will join us to talk about the NBA offseason, including Kawhi Leonard and Paul George going to the Los Angeles Clippers. But first, right now, we have Truth About It's Washington Wizards insider Troy Halliburton online. What's going on, Troy?
What's going on, guys? How you doing today?
We're good, Troy.
Doing good, man. Good. How are you?
How are you, Troy?
Man, I'm good. I'm good. Just, you know, relaxing. Glad, this summertime. Glad that it's not 100 degrees like it was last week in D.C. So all is well.
I see you checking out go-go spots.
Yeah, we true to this, not new to this.
I know, I appreciate that, my man. I love following you on Twitter. But Troy, man, you know, it's been busy for you. The Washington Wizards are making moves in a three-team deal with the Nets and Spurs. The Wizards received four Davis Bertans. Your thoughts on that move?
I love the move. Davis Bertans.
Yeah, Bertans, thank you.
Yeah, he's the quintessential stretch four in today's NBA. He's a career 40% three-point shooter, and that's not it's not on a Satoransky attempt season. He's not shooting one a game. Mm-hmm. You know, he's taking four or five a game. So, you know, we're talking about a guy who automatically comes in and stretches the floor. I think that the Wizards need to be running a different style of offense going forward. I think that they've been bogged down too much by, you know, having too many shot creators on the floor and not enough proper spacing by having enough good shooters out there. So I think that he'll definitely help out. He'll 100% be in the rotation, whether that's starting or being one of the sixth or seventh men coming off the bench.
Troy, you hit on the recent trade that they made. I want to talk about some of the free agent acquisitions they picked up specifically at the point guard position with Isaiah Thomas and Ish Smith. With John Wall being out, I'm a fan of this team. How do I really get excited about those transactions? Looking at the makeup of this team and looking at the two point guards that they brought in.
Well, I hate to be the Debbie Downer here, but I don't think there's much to be excited about when it comes to the team's two point guard transactions. I think that if there was any weakness in what Tommy Shepherd has done this offseason, it would have to be what he did at the point guard position. Now, we're looking at this is a twofold thing because, you know, we had a point guard that was here, Thomas Satoransky, who's a more than capable player, but he ended up leaving. And part of the reason why he left was because of how he felt like the team and coaching staff had treated him over the years. Mm. You know, he had been here playing well, filling in for John Wall, and it seems that Scott Brooks wanted to play everybody and their mother over him. You know, they played Tim Frazier over him. They played Trey Burke over him. They played Brandon Jennings over him. Mm. You know, they brought Ty Lawson in from China. He didn't play an NBA minute the whole season and took Thomas Satoransky's playoff minute. I think that, honestly, when that situation happened, that, you know, Thomas already had one foot out the door. So when you look at that situation, so they ruined the relationship with the backup point guard, and he left. So now they have to go out. They can't match an offer sheet. Now, credit to them for getting two draft picks in return for Satoransky. But now they had to go out and sign two point guards. And I would say this. Scott Brooks has shown over the years that he's been in D.C. that he has a particular type that he likes at point guard. Mm-hmm. And that's point guards that remind him of himself. So he likes the smaller, quicker point guards who move the ball up the floor. And that's why they brought in Ish Smith and Isaiah Thomas. So, I mean, who knows? I think that Isaiah Thomas is a good reclamation project. But, I mean, there's no confidence in him being able to stay on the court healthy or even get back to the play that he had before he got injured. Now, as far as Ish Smith goes, Ish Smith is a quality backup point guard. But with the position of you only having him and Isaiah Thomas, now he's forced into probably being a starter, having to play, you know, 25 to 30 minutes a game for all 82 games. And, you know, and while I think Ish Smith is a more than capable NBA player, I don't feel confident going into the season with him being the starting point guard.
Another question for you about a recent transaction they made. They recently traded Dwight Howard to Memphis, and Dwight Howard is going to be, or I don't know, or has been waived by the Memphis Grizzlies, reportedly. Mm-hmm. How do we look at this? I would guess the turnover of this roster, right? You know, with the two acquisitions that we mentioned with Isaiah Thomas and Ish Smith, drafting Roy Hachimura, and then allowing Satoransky to go, but bringing back Thomas Bryant. How do we look? Is this a team that's in transition, or is this a team that has a strategy for the long term to get under the cap? To get under the cap, and free agents.
I think they're already under the cap line for this year, mm-hmm. and I think that they are in transition, as you said, to make sure they have space coming up next summer when, you know, they'll get some of these contracts off the book, like Jan Mahimi. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is very clear that they're in a transition year. Now, I think that the problem that we have here is the lack of communication between the organization and the media and the fans with what the direction is. So, you know, when you have fans that are getting mad that, you know, they aren't making certain signs, they aren't doing a certain thing, they will probably, you know, be able to stomach a lot of these moves a lot easier if they were told up front that, you know, this is going to be a transition year and we're going to, you know, try to get our stuff, get our affairs in order, because Ernie Grunfeld, the past team president, left it all messed up.
Well, let me ask you this. It's kind of hard from an organizational standpoint to communicate that transition to the fans if you technically don't have a vice president of basketball operations and or GM. Do you know anything that's going on with Tommy Shepherd? Has he officially – does he still have the interim tag? Is he just a guy in limbo? Or do you think he's going to be eventually named the vice president or president of basketball operations or GM?
So, from what I can gather and my read on the situation is that Tommy Shepherd is currently the interim, but he will be the future president of basketball operations for the Wizards going forward. So I think that's pretty much locked in already as to something that will happen eventually. And I do believe that they will probably end up bringing in somebody else, one of the other candidates between, I would say, between Danny Ferry and Troy Weaver to be the GM. So they'll have, so basically what they're doing is they're allocating the positions of power. They're breaking it down where Ernie, you know, pretty much had all the power. They're going to have, going forward, it'll be more voices involved in some of the decision-making that's going on with the team. So I think that Tommy Shepard has, you know, he's kind of already proven that, you know, number one, that he can save money with the best of them and, you know, flip a couple assets. And, you know, Ted, he always loves that, somebody that's going to save the money. So I think that, you know, and Tommy's a good guy, too. So, you know, I think that he fits very well as being the president of basketball operations. And, you know, it depending on who they bring in to fill in that second role, I think that the team will be in good hands going forward.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. We have Truth About It's Wizards insider Troy Halliburton online. So, Troy, I want to get back to the Isaiah Thomas thing, because actually I'm like one of many few that thinks Isaiah Thomas – The reason why they signed him was a good look for me, because this team doesn't want to quit on John Wall, obviously, and you get a guy in Isaiah Thomas, a one-year deal that works good for both sides, right? Because the Wizards aren't trying, in my opinion, aren't trying to win a championship. They're not trying to, or not even trying to me, they're just trying to be, you're just trying to main afloat. So when I look at the Wizards, Isaiah, if he plays good for one season, he's off the books, and this team can compete, because that's all they want to do is compete, right? So, and then you have John Wall for next season. I mean, for the season after. So, like, I kind of like the move of Isaiah, because you're still showing John Wall that you believe in John Wall. And you're giving Isaiah an opportunity to show out and show the league that he still has it.
Right. I think the key word that you hit on right there is opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's why this relationship really works for mm-hmm. both sides. Mm-hmm. Because Isaiah Thomas, you know, he's looking for playing time. That's the only way that he can show the league that he is back to being who he was is by playing. So it was smart for him to, you know, decipher out, you know, the different teams. I'm sure he probably had a couple teams that were looking at him, but no other team was going to be able to give him an opportunity. Agreed. You know, if he comes in and he's healthy, you know, he could play easily 20 minutes a game for the Wizards next year. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, you know, and that's really invaluable for somebody like him in his position. And from the Wizards side, I think that this is a very low-risk, high-reward proposition that they put themselves into. So even if, let's say, Isaiah Thomas comes in and he's not able to play, really the only thing they've wasted is a veteran minimum contract.
Of course.
You know, mm-hmm. but if he's able to come in and even, the guy averaged 28 points a game for mm-hmm. two seasons in a row. Mm-hmm. He was an all-star, an all-NBA player. You know, I mean, if this guy can come in and give you 70% of what he once was, that's a plus. Like, if he come in and a backup point guard, he can average 15 points a game. You know, I mean, that's a win for this team. And I think that, you know, from all accounts, Isaiah has been a very good locker room guy and all of his stops. He hasn't been bitter about, you know, how the situation in Boston played out and how, you know, he kept talking about backing up the Brinks truck and you know, that truck never got there. So, for a lot of people, you know, they might be bitter and take it out on their teammates and coaches and all that. But Isaiah Thomas, he doesn't really seem like that guy. So, like I said, I mean, I think the situation works out for both sides. Isaiah gets the opportunity that he's looking for, and the Wizards get, you know, a pretty much free look on a guy who used to be great.
So Will mentioned.
No, I was going to say, I would beg to differ with both of you on that point. And here's why.
Mm-hmm.
If this team is a team that's in transition and you know that this isn't a year where you're going to be competitive, I would think that you would go out, you would find a younger point guard, a guy who you could help mold and develop.
Mm-hmm.
And can potentially be your backup point guard when John Wall comes in, but can play at a high level for this year for you. I think if you're a team that's not competing for anything, there really isn't a need for you to have a lot of veterans on this team, especially when you have when you're trying to rebuild this team from the ground up.
Hey, Troy, let you go first.
Let me counter that point. So they do have a younger player. They signed a priority undrafted player, Justin Robinson out of Virginia Tech,
mm-hmm.
to come in. He's played well in summer league. He's the guy. He's the point guard that they're going to try to develop, mm-hmm. you know, going forward. And as far as the Isaiah Thomas situation, I mean, I understand what you're saying about having veterans and having younger players. The player, the hypothetical player that you're describing, the young player who you can develop and also play, he didn't exist on the market. He didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So to go out and get Isaiah, you know, first thing, like, I think another thing that people are forgetting is that the team has to, maybe they're not set on winning and trying to make the playoffs, but they got to put forth a respectable effort if for no other reason of selling Bradley Beal on reasons why he should stay.
Good point.
Like, if the team go out and they just get, you know, Joe Blow, young point guard, he come in and he don't fit and it doesn't work, Brad going to be side-eyeing the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Who's coming up? He's going to be asking to get traded next summer. They need to be doing everything possible to make sure that Brad's happy. And when Brad, he was retweeting with all the emojis when Isaiah brought in, so obviously he's happy about it. You know, I think you're looking at the situation all wrong.
Well, I mean, we have a difference of opinion. I think there was a guy out there, Emmanuel Mudiay, who played for the Knicks last year, who you could.
You like Mudiay?
I'm not saying
okay.
He's an answer.
Okay,
right?
Got you.
A long term answer, but I'm saying if you're a team that's in transition, mm-hmm. what you try to do is you try to find young, cheaper talent,
mm-hmm.
and you get those guys minutes, and you develop them. And that way, in that process of developing them, you have a whole year. You say, okay, does he fit with us long term? Right? Because what you're doing, okay, let's say. Best case scenario, Isaiah Thomas does play like he played in Boston year when, you know, when he could have possibly been the MVP.
You're just going to lose him.
You're just going to lose him for absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you may try to flip him at the trade deadline,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, realistically, you've wasted time. I'm not going to say wasted time, but you've invested time in a guy who isn't part of your long-term plan. That's the problem with this organization. This organization doesn't plan for the long term. They don't develop the long-term talent unless only guys we can say that they have developed has been John Wall and Bradley Beal over the years consistently. And look where that's gotten us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
The thing is, I just gave you the guy that they're going to develop for the long term. And you throw out Emmanuel Mudiay saying, you know that this is a free agency market. It has to be interest on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Emmanuel Mudiay signed his deal 2 days after free agency began with Utah because there was a fit there because he wants to compete for a championship. Like, I'm sure the Wizards made calls to some players mm-hmm. who were not receptive to wanting to come here. Like, there has to be an interest on both sides here. So, I mean, you throwing out names, that's a great hypothetical name, but that, I mean, Emmanuel Mudiay was never coming to D.C. to play. Like, that just wasn't happening.
Well, this my thing about the whole point guard situation is that it's not even about I think if you brought in a young guy, this is my opinion, just by watching John Wall from afar, that John Wall is very sensitive. You know what I mean? And I feel like you bring in a guy that is showing upside, like that is young and as a guy that, you know what, you can actually have the question, well, if John Wall ain't healthy, we don't need him. You know, he's the type of dude that is uber sensitive. I'm just saying,
this is a business.
I agree. But I'm saying this team has already shown you that they believe in John Wall. I'm just saying that's what this that's the mindset of this team. We're talking about this organization.
If you have that mindset as an organization, mm-hmm. you are continue to be an organization that is going to draft in the lottery and will never make it past the second round.
I'm just giving a reason why this team is acting. They're doing business that way. Because that was the case, they would trade. To be real with you, that was the case, they'd be trading away Bradley Beal.
Nah, you keep Bradley.
So that's the case. They'd be trading Bradley Beal. I mean, if that's the case, you know what I mean? If they're worried about picks and getting extra, I mean, of anybody with true value is Bradley Beal.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that I don't necessarily agree with them not wanting to ruffle John Wall's feathers because mm-hmm. I tell you this, if Kobe White had fell to them at number 9, he'd be a Washington Wizard right now.
You think so?
So, yeah, I'm telling you.
Okay. Like, I believe.
So that's, you know, they brought him in. They brought Kobe White in for a workout.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Leonsis was there. Bradley Beal was there. Everybody was there. Everybody in the organization loved him. I mean, they tipped their hand with that one, but the chances of him falling to number 9 were very slim to none.
Mm-hmm.
But it all depends on the situation. So if there was a player out there like a Kobe White, if he was available to them in the draft, they would have taken him.
Mm.
So it's not like oh, they afraid to ruffle John Wall's feathers.
Okay.
It's like you have to play the hands that's dealt to you. So the hand that was dealt to them was they couldn't get Kobe White. All the other point guards, they were interested in Corey Joseph. He signed for a deal making $13 million in Sacramento. They liked him a lot.
Why?
He wasn't affordable for them.
Why? Why they like him a lot? That's terrible.
I mean, Corey Joseph's a better basketball player than Emmanuel Mudiay. So, like, let's keep it real here.
That's true.
They're playing the best hand for what they were dealt. So when they were dealt with the free agency market, when they were looking for point guard, was a bunch of lower level names and guys with not a lot of experience. They went for a high upside play and Isaiah Thomas and a safe, consistent bet in Smith. So I mean, I didn't like the move, but now you're forcing me to have to defend on the podcast. It's you bringing up points that I just don't agree with.
hey, Choice, let's go to Summer League real quick. Rui Hachimura and Aaron Schofield. Your thoughts of them in the Summer League game so far?
Rui looked. The first game was a little bit rough, but he still ended up scoring 14 points. Yesterday, he looked a lot better. He had 19 points and 7 rebounds. I think the biggest thing to look at with his game is that his strengths are very noticeable. Like he can score around the rim. He's got good touch on his mid-range pick and pop game, and he's a little bit of a better defender than I think that the scouts gave him credit for before the draft. Now his offensive game, when we're talking about the downside of it, is that he's not really a good three-point shooter. Yeah. But I think that we all knew that going into it, so that's something that he's clearly going to have to develop. Admiral Schofield, he's looked decent. He looks like a hustle player. But to be quite honest, I think that he's a player who is more suited to be featured on the Capital City Go-Go next year than to be contributing on the Washington Wizards. And that's not necessarily a bad thing either. You take a second round pick of a guy, a veteran guy, good character guy. You want him, you're bringing him in, you know, basically thinking that he's going to work harder and he's going to improve and get better. And I say this, one thing I went to a couple of the summer league practices. I saw Adam Schofield walking around. I thought they drafted a defensive end. Dude, I mean, he's jacked.
Pops play football.
Exactly. So, you know, I like the Schofield pickup, but Rui is clearly going to be in the rotation and play, have a role in the team this season. I think Schofield is probably going to, you know, if they get injuries and something like that, then he'll maybe get thrown in there. But I think that he's going to be in a developmental year for this season. Now, one player he did mention who I have been impressed by is Troy Brown.
I was about to mention him.
He's coming back after last year. I think that, you know, first of all, we have to talk about how Troy Brown was the number 15 pick in the draft last year and only played 600 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's not on him. That's on the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. You know, they bringing in guys, you know, they bringing in all Sam Deckers and Ron Bakers and all these dudes playing in front of him. That just doesn't make any sense. So he really didn't get a chance to develop like he needed to last year because, you know, the coaching staff didn't play him. But this summer, he looks a lot more comfortable handling the ball, making stuff happen. You know, he's 6'7". He can guard multiple positions. He can play multiple positions on the offensive end. You know, I really like him as a prospect.
So do you think he starts next season then?
I think that there is a good chance that he could start at the small forward position. I think that we might be in another situation where, similar to Thomas Satoransky, where Troy Brown might be playing out of position because, you know, I've talked to him over the years and, you know, he came up playing point guard. And, you know, he believes that he can play point guard in the NBA. So, you know, if he believes it and, you know, with this point guard situation doesn't work out, he's able to prove himself, he might be able to, you know, go ahead and slide down and play the one. But I think that there's a vacant spot for him to be able to start at the small forward position too. So I know the coaching staff, they love him. Troy Brown works hard. So I feel confident with his perspectives as a future pro.
Hey, Troy, I agree. I mean, I think that I like Troy Brown. I mean, I didn't like him when he was drafted, but I think he plays smart, and I can see how he can play the point guard position. But Troy, before I let you go, man, appreciate you for being on and letting my listeners know about Truth About It, some of your articles, and what you got going on.
All
your listeners?
Okay, yeah. So we're actually in the middle of a revamp of Truth About It, the Truth About It site. We're going to be coming back harder than ever starting next season, but we're redoing the site, getting some new graphics in there. Me and my guy, Rashad Mobley, going to be taking over and making sure we do some good things. So, I'm still doing a bunch of other work, freelancing over at the Washington City Paper. Shout out to my guy, Kellen Song, over there. And, I'm excited for, what will come of this Washington Wizards season.
Hey, my man, Troy, I appreciate you, my man.
Hey, man, no problem. You already know, man. I got the text, man. So the bat signal went up, and I'm always going to answer.
Hey, my man. Hey, when the season starts, preseason, I'm getting you back on. Maybe before that. There's a lot going on anyway.
I mean, you never know. Hopefully, there'll be some Wizards news. Hopefully, this Tommy Shepard news will break. I can come back on and boast about how I said it happened 2 months ago.
Yeah. That's true. Or maybe they signed Melo. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right, Troy.
All right, now y'all take it easy.
All right, take it easy, my man.
Yep.
All right. Hey, that's my man, Troy Halliburton from Truth About It. He's the Washington Wizards insider. What happened to Wizards sign Melo? That'd be hilarious. B more DC. Tank?
That'd be terrible.
Anyway, the MLB...
For this team, anyway.
I know, for this team, true that. The MLB All-Star Game is going on now. Anthony Rendon decided not to play. We'll talk about that after the break. Listen to the Urban Sports Thing.
For ages. You dig? Deuces.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T and myself, Wally, Ray Jeezy's out. All right, man. Nationals third baseman Anthony Rendon was selected to his first All-Star game. He decided to rest up and skip tonight's game. Do you have an issue with that?
Absolutely not.
I agree.
He's been in the lineup pretty consistently just about every day.
Mm-hmm.
He needs, this team is in the position for a wild card spot. It would have been good for him to at least gone to Cleveland, but I totally understand why he doesn't. And his personality just doesn't seem like he's, all that. He just doesn't want all the hype and the media attention that goes with going to an All-Star game.
I agree. I heard folks saying that he should play, if he played in the regular season closer to the All-Star game, that – if he can play in the regular season, he can play in the All-Star game. One, I think Will T mentioned it. They were in the race for the top seed in the wild card, and they had and even an opportunity to get closer to first place in the NL East. So he's gonna play in those games because it's important to his team and it's important to him. Anthony Rendon is very valuable to the Washington Nationals. So if he's healthy enough to play in a regular season game that can impact the Nationals playoffs seedings or whatnot, then yeah, he should do that. You can't compare the two. You can't compare an All-Star playing in the All-Star game to helping the Nats get to the postseason. Like, you can't compare the two. So I have no issue with Anthony Rendon not playing. We see this all the time in all other All-Star events, right? We see it in the Pro Bowl, we see it in the NBA All-Star game. If a guy is hurt, he'll rest up. He may go to the All-Star festivities, but he'll rest up.
Yeah, I would rather him rest up, get ready for this stretch run out of the break. They have a pretty tough schedule, with three at Philadelphia, then two at Baltimore, even though Baltimore sucks, but Baltimore's always played. No, I mean, Baltimore has played them historically well.
That's my team. See, I said that. No, and Baltimore sucks. Hey, oh, we all right, man. We're going to be all right.
And do you have three at Atlanta? So you have six really important games, six important divisional games that can help either put you in a position to contend for the NL East, or can keep you in a position of just staying afloat and getting a wild card spot?
No, agreed. But no, we'll talk about the Nationals post All-Star game push after the break. Listen to the Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, it's born like this. Immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this. With Yao Shu, a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate. Then off your head. This that put the kids to bed. This that I got realness. I just kill shit, cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, like Wimbledon, I serve. Yeah, that's him again, the sound that engine in is like a bird. You see fireworks and carpet tires, skirt the boulevard. I know how you work, I know.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, myself, Wally, Ray Jeezy's out. Again, join me on Sunday, August 4th at Bowie Bay Sox Stadium for the first annual celebrity kickball game in honor of my homie, B Sharp, and all affected by mental illness and suicide. This game will include former NFL players Santana Moss, Dee Boden, and Vasanti Shenko. The kickball game will be after the Bowie Bay Sox game. The Bowie Bay Sox game is at 1:35 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can buy your tickets at www.groupmatics.events/event/Lawrence Law. All right, the Washington Nationals started the season 19-31. And now they are 47-42. They are in second place in the NL East, six games behind the Atlanta Braves for first. They also have the number one slot in the NL wild card. How have the Nats turned their season around?
A couple of things. You got Trey Turner back.
Mm-hmm.
B, Anthony Rendon's been outside of his missing a couple games. He's been relatively healthy and has been playing at an almost MVP level.
Lights out.
And three, your top four pitchers, you know, after Anibal Sanchez came back from the injury, they played phenomenal. Mm-hmm. You know, Max Scherzer leads the NL in strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
Strasburg is number two. And then also on top of that, what's his name?
Patrick Corbin.
Patrick Corbin is also with top 10 in strikeouts. So you have three guys who are strikeout pitchers, and then every fifth day you have Anibal Sanchez who's been giving you some quality innings once he's come back off of his injury.
I'll go one step further. I think Anibal Sanchez, since coming off the injury, the IL, he's been one of the better pitchers in baseball, period. You know, a lot of people, it's a thing, you know, because they trashed him so early in the season because he did pitch bad. But if you look at him after the All-Star, after the IL stint, he's been good. He's been one of the better pitchers in baseball, not just for the Nationals, but in baseball. He's giving you about 6 to 7 innings. And you know, literally, you've seen games where he's been shutting the opposition down. He has been a solid, solid pitcher. In terms of your fourth pitcher, man in your rotation, he's been excellent. Not just good, but excellent. So, to me, what you mentioned, Will T, the pitching staff has turned everything around for this team. You got four starters right now that have held you down. And obviously, the schedule, too, because they played some bad teams in that same process. But at the same time, your starters have stepped up when you needed them to. And you mentioned Rendon. Rendon has been very consistent. He's been the same dude he's always been. Howie Kendrick. That's a guy that's held him out. Para, in terms of
Para's come to this club, he's brought like a certain energy to the team.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a leader in the dugout. Yeah. He's been a leader in the dugout. But
that goes to a greater point. How can a guy like Para come here and totally kind of change? I'm not gonna say change, but influence the culture much in that clubhouse?
He made it fun. Like he made it fun. You see, like they're smiling, they're having a good time.
I get it. I get it, but what does that say about the leadership that you already
have? Well, I mean, sometimes, you know, they missed Jason Worth, right? We talk about it, you know, we talked about it before. I'm not saying Jason Worth was as fun as Parr is, but it's a different element. Everybody leads differently, right? Mm-hmm. They get their players up differently, and Parr has done that, having that, I guess, that, like, I call like a soul train line or whatever you want to call it. They call it a dance party, but it's a soul train line to me. So, like, and these guys are having fun. You could tell once they hit that home run, right? They look forward to getting to the dugout. You could tell like Dozier playing better baseball.
I was about to mention Dozier, and then also, even though Ryan Zimmerman's been out,
He's hitting well since coming back.
He's coming back, hit well. Even Matt Adams has been in spots, been very big, you know, with the left hand back, putting that in a lineup. Mm-hmm. So, this lineup is looking deep on outside. The only thing I'll say, the only disappointment thus far for me has been Yan Gomes.
Yeah, Yan Gomes.
And then I expected Michael A. Taylor to be more consistent with it when he had his opportunity. See, I thought he would be better this year.
It's unfortunate. This is the thing about baseball players, man. It's unfortunate that the Nats outfield is stacked. You know what I mean? Because he needs the bats to get – because he's a guy who is about confidence, right? So he needs the bats to build his confidence. And if he's only going to play like once out of, I'm throwing out a wild number, like one out of 10 days or whatever, like he's not going to get into a rhythm. He's not that type of player. I think he has a lot of ability. I think he will be a good baseball player with the right team. The Nats need to trade him. They need to trade him because if you're going to keep Adam Eaton playing right field, you're going to have to trade the kid. Seriously.
Yeah, because I think when they sent him down this time, I think he's out of options.
Yeah.
I don't think you can option him.
Maybe. I have no – I'm not sure.
So,
but
I'm not sure either. But, you know, if you make a determination that Michael A. Taylor isn't in your long-term future, and I think Adam Eaton has two more years of team control through arbitration, you got to – look, that, you know, Fernando Rodney's played pretty good, but do you want to depend on – 42-year-old Fernando Rodney as a back end of that bullpen, you know, in the seventh inning. Maybe you need to trade Michael A. Taylor for another arm in the back of that bullpen.
It goes to the next question. What do the Nats need to do to maintain a good run post All-Star break?
Health.
Health, okay.
You need health.
You mentioned the bullpen. You mentioned
the bullpen. I mean, Fernando Rodney looks like there's a possibility he could be a guy who could stabilize.
I like Fernando Rodney.
For eighth inning. And also could be your backup
closer. And which he has done so far.
Yeah, which he has done. But you need to get more consistency from those guys that are going to pitch specifically the seventh inning.
Yeah. And, I agree. I think what you're saying, like the bullpen. But I do, you know, and I've said this before, and I said this on a prior show, that I believe that Davey has improved as a manager. Like I'm a belief, like people, like they're gonna say health or whatnot, but if you really watch the games, he's improved as a manager in terms of who he's brought in the bullpen, his lineups. He's improved. He's improved, and I think that's a key for the second. For the second half, I'm going to call second half, post All-Star break, is that does Davey continue to improve as a manager?
No, go ahead. My apologies. Go ahead. I thought you only had one.
Oh, no. And secondly, the bullpen, I mean, and just keeping that the starting, finding a fifth starter, like, is my thing. Like, Vault, I don't believe in him. I don't believe him at all. I think Fetty was good. I think they jumped the gun by sending Fetty down. Fetty, for a fifth starter, was pitching well enough. He had two bad starts. No one's perfect. Max had a couple bad starts in a row. Straws had a couple bad starts in a row. Corbin looked like had three starts and he didn't look good. No one was scared about that. Dude only had two bad starts and you sent him down just because Austin Voigt had a game where he shut down. I forgot the team. I think the Braves. He shut down the Braves. He struck out a lot of players in that Braves game. So. Fetty, to me, I would like to see him back up as the fifth starter. I mean,
they have some options, right? You have Eric Fetty. You have Jeremy Hellickson.
You got Ross.
Ross also. So you have some guys who could potentially plug in, you know, every fifth day and be your fifth starter. Mm-hmm. Another thing I wouldn't mind seeing them do, even though it may be highly unlikely because this is an interdivisional team, but bring back Wilson Ramos and get rid of Yan Gomes. The Yan Gomes experiment hasn't necessarily. I know they aren't going to do it.
I mean, I feel I know a lot of and Wilson yeah. Ramos is. I like Wilson Ramos, yeah. So you're not going to hit me. But I mean, that's the thing about Suzuki though. Suzuki's been so good.
Yeah, Suzuki's
like,
been
do
good.
You really need to make a trade for? Like, you can platoon.
I mean, but you can platoon. Yeah. But I still want that.
I mean,
I wanted to be stronger.
I get it. I mean, I get it. Don't get me wrong. But I just think that you got Suzuki, who's been so clutch. And truth be told, he's a bit more of the starter than Gomes anyway. So it's like, I don't know. I think the catcher situation, because of Suzuki, like, I don't know if they have the desire to go after Ramos. I thought they should have went after Ramos, though. He was available. They could have been.
Yeah, I thought they were going to go after him last season, this winter.
Yeah, winter,
but they,
yeah.
That, but they traded for Yan Gomes, mm-hmm. And I was all for it when it happened. You know, he was a guy who's coming off some all-star appearances.
Yeah, Gomes isn't a bad player. I think it's a lot of pressure, you know, I mean, to play with the Nats. I mean, but what you want your – I think he catches Strasburg. I remember he serves me correctly. And I think he's handled Strasburg pretty well. That's his main – I mean, that's his main goal anyway, to make sure he handles the pitching staff, right? And he's handled Strauss. I believe Suzuki's more Max's guy and Gomes and Strauss from what I've seen. But, yeah, I like what the Nats are doing right now. I think they're in good position to catch Atlanta, and they can do it. You know, I think they can really catch the Atlanta Braves. They've already passed the Phillies. But I do think they're going to have to make one move, and it's going to have to be a bullpen guy. It may not be a sexy guy, but a guy who can help stabilize their bullpen.
And don't give up any top prospects.
Yeah, don't give up any top prospects.
Don't
I agree.
Give up any top
it's not worth it.
Especially pitching prospects.
You know, I mean, I'm an Orioles fan. I think they should go after Michael Givens. But that's a whole different thing.
As we watch the All-Star game, I can't Mike Rizzo doesn't lose a lot of trades.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, Adam Eaton's been –
He's been good.
Solid.
He's been solid. Oh, yeah.
But you see what Lucas Giolito was turning into.
But everyone knew. I mean, he had the ability.
But he had the ability, but it seemed like the Nationals gave up on the
because they spot started him. They spot started him. Because they're doing the same thing with Fetty. Like, the same exact thing. They're doing what they did with Giolito. They spot started him. Like, you just got – sometimes when you got a dude like that, he was named. He was up there in your organization.
I think he was the number one prospect in baseball.
Right, in baseball, right? You throw him to the fire, man. But that's the problem when you have a good team. The problem when your team is good. There's pressure on that kid to just take it to the next level. And
But look at other organizations like the Yankees and look at the Braves. Look what the Braves are doing with some of their top
prospects. I'm talking about pitchers, though. That's different from hitters, though. Like, you're right. With hitters, is a little different. Like, Robles, you can still – because you see it's different. But for pitchers, especially when you're with the Nats, when you have Strauss, when you have Scherzer, right – you're looking up to, like, and even Gio, to a certain extent, was over 500 winning games. You're looking to him like, damn, I can't struggle. Especially last season.
And I know it's in a vacuum now, and mm-hmm. I'm asking you to putting you on the spot, mm-hmm. but just based off of how things have turned out, would you have rather had Lucas Giolito or Adam Eaton?
I'm gonna give you the right answer. I would kept Giolito, and not because of Adam, because the dude you mentioned, mm-hmm. but prior,
whoa.
Michael A. Taylor. Yeah. If you believe in Michael A. Taylor, like everyone did initially, right? Why do I need to trade Giolito?
Yeah.
Because I have Robles. My outfit is stacked. I got
Robles.
Soto.
Yep.
I got Robles, and I got Michael A. Taylor.
Yeah.
I got range every Soto, obviously, but I got Michael A. Taylor and Robles. I got range.
Yeah.
You know, if you want me to keep it a buck, I thought they were going to try to get rid of Eaton, though. I thought they were initially. I was wrong, though. I thought they were. But anyway, PG-13, Kawhi are playing for the Clippers. Host of the Quarterly Report podcast, Armon Lee, will join us after the break to discuss this. You listen to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You
dig? Deuces.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, myself, Wally, Ray Gigi's out. Check out the Football Garbage Time podcast at www.footballgarbagetime.com. It's a great show. Make sure you check them out. They talk about football and fantasy football, all that good jazz. Right now, we have host of the Quarterly Report podcast, Armon Lee, on the line. What's going on, Armon?
Hey, what's going on, y'all, man? Thanks for having me back, bro.
Hey, no problem, my man. You know, I checked out your podcast. I got a lot to talk about about your podcast because, you know, this Utah Jazz thing's getting me. But we'll talk about that later, though.
I'm ready.
I know you're ready. I know you're ready. It's getting me, but we'll talk about it later. I want to talk about Kawhi anyway. Kawhi and what Paul George decided to do. The Clippers signed Kawhi Leonard to a 4-year deal worth $140.6 million. Then they traded Shai Gilgeous, Alexander Gallinari, and 4 first-round picks for Paul George. What are your thoughts on the deal?
4 protected first-round and one
unprotected. Yeah,
thanks, Wilty. My man.
No problem. So 5 total first.
5 total first round picks. So Armon, what are your thoughts on the deal?
And the ability to swap 2
other
picks.
You know, so my thoughts on the deal, I'm kind of conflicted, right? If you're the Clippers, you go for it, right? If you know that Paul George will deliver you Kawhi Leonard, you go all in. I'm always been of the mindset that it's weird in the NBA, especially depending on fans and the different analysts. They act as if first-round picks are a guarantee to deliver you Kawhi Leonard or, you know, same thing happened with the Lakers. Everybody's like, oh, my God, they're giving up so many picks to Anthony Davis. And my response to that is you would give your left arm for one of those picks to be half as good as Anthony Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just not – you picks, this is what I look at it, right? We know that Paul George, Anthony Davis, whomever you want to talk about, they are a known commodity in the league. Picks are just a lottery, like a lottery ticket. You wouldn't trade your hard-earned paycheck, which is a known commodity, for Powerball tickets. You just wouldn't do it. So that's essentially what the Clippers did. They gave up the chance of drafting somebody special for the actual reality to not only trade for Paul George, an all-NBA player, but to get arguably the best player in the league. Kawhi Leonard basically told him, you give me Paul George, I will sign with you. There is no amount of picks that I wouldn't trade for that.
No, I agree. You bring in that duo, that tandem, right? You get Paul George, and you want Kawhi. If you want Kawhi that bad, you make it happen. And I'm just surprised at how that all transpired. You know what I mean? Paul George, Kawhi meeting up with Paul George. We look at Kawhi as this quiet, silent dude. He meets up with Paul George and like, you know what? I want to play with you. Try to force this trade out. And Paul George was like, yeah, buddy, I'll do it. And it was just like, you just signed this long-term. You just signed a deal to stay with Russ. You know what I mean? Now it's like Kawhi hits you with those sweet words, and now it's like, all right, well, about that, I'm about to go home and do this thing.
You bring up an interesting point, right? Because from the outside, it looked as if OKC did a lot to acquiesce to Paul George to make him happy, and then Russell Westbrook that first year then played both. I'll say both of these 2 years. You know,
yeah.
Specifically the second year, he kind of took a back seat.
Sure
a
did.
Little. I understand that, you know, this team was flush at the cap, couldn't make any major changes for them to get, you know, to advance past the first round. But outside of that, I wonder what really went wrong from Paul George's perspective, right? It can't be that.
It's just Kawhi.
It can't be that, it's just Kawhi and it's L.A. because you had the opportunity to go to L.A. before.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to understand just from my perspective, you know, and I know no one on this phone knows the answer, but I'm curious to know from Paul George's perspective, what changed that quickly?
No, I mean, you make an interesting point. I do think that a lot of the younger guys who kind of came up with LeBron or idolizing LeBron, they may not want to play with him because they know that if you do play with LeBron, you won't get the necessary attention. You know what I mean? It'll always be LeBron did this, and if anything goes wrong, it'll be okay, well, you're not good enough. So I do think that there is a certain intimidation factor with playing with LeBron. And last offseason, if you remember, no one thought the Clippers were anything close to being a legit franchise, right? It's something that happened with my, for those of you who don't know, I'm a Knicks fan. And what the Nets and the Clippers have done, they've shown you when the Knicks are a bad team, and unless you're the Los Angeles Lakers, you can't attract top talent if you're not winning games. What the Clippers and what the Nets have shown us the last two seasons is, if you can build something, it's not like the Clippers or the Nets won 60 games that they won like 44 and 46 games respectively. Don't quote me on, but around those games, but there was promise. And once you can get people to believe in your promise and to buy in into your promise, then you can attract free agents. So I do think last offseason, Paul George didn't want to be LeBron James' second banana because that comes with a lot of stuff that I don't think a lot of guys want to deal with.
That's what it was.
Yeah, and then last year, the Clippers, Paul George didn't want to tie himself to the Clippers because last year, it wasn't like the Clippers were doing anything. But now we saw, okay, yo, the Clippers can get to the playoffs without Kawhi. The Clippers can get to the playoffs without me. They then add Kawhi and I can come. Well, now we can think about winning the championship. So I think all of that, again, like you said earlier, no one here knows what was going on in qualifying, and you're right. It would be a fascinating conversation if the truth could ever come out. I don't know how honest he would be about talking about why he decided to come to L.A. now. But I do think all of these things do play a factor into his decision.
Well, let me ask you a question. I got a question for you and Wally now. The majority of the transactions for the Clippers and the Lakers have been made already. Now, looking at it, putting both teams side by side, knowing how both of their stars play, right?
Yeah.
This sets the stars play. Which team do you think is the better team? Not the better duo, but the better team right now, today?
Why? You know you can't ask me that. Go ahead. Go, Armand. You go first.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm biased. So.
I know you are biased, but it's all good. If you were to remove just the star player, right? If you say, okay, PG, Kawhi, Bong, you out of here. LeBron, AD, Bong, you out of here too. And you just look at the talent on both rosters, I think that the Clippers are a deeper team. There's just more question marks regarding the Lakers, right? We don't know how good Boogie's going to be. Just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if Kuzma is going to take the next step. He's improved as a player, but now it's like, dog, turn the wheels off. We need you to be a legit every night ball. You can't take nights off anymore. The training wheels off. If you look at the Clippers, yeah, they gave up Gallinari, and Gallinari had a hell of a year. Yeah, they gave up, I think, they didn't even give up.
Shamber's still there.
They still have Lou. They still have Montrez. The guys who, they still have Pat Beverly. The main, with the exception of Gallinari, and, you know, Shea was a contributor, but he was a rookie, so they wasn't like they were playing him a lot of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
They still have the essential core of a playoff team last year. And that's without Kawhi, and that's without Paul George. So I don't even think that, I honestly feel that the Clippers supporting guys is significantly better, and that goes before we even talk about coaching.
Yeah, coaching's better. I'm not going to deny that, but I do like the coaches. I said my, you can tell I'm so biased. I do like I'm in the minority. I like the Lakers coaching staff. But, you know, for me, I think you mentioned Boogie. I've always said this about injuries. And I said this before the Lakers got Boogie. I said this about whoever it was, the Warriors or whoever gave Boogie on his second year after his Achilles, you get the real Boogie. And this is just what I feel about that type of injury. And Boogie is based on skill, not based on athleticism anyway. So when I looked at Boogie, like after this season, I thought he rushed it anyway. But after this season, I think you'll get the real Boogie. And that's whoever Boogie played for. I said that, period, because he's a big who can pick and pop. He can pass out the post. He can pass to the high post. He's a bruiser. He's a skilled big man. And we saw what Boogie did with AD. I just think that for me, if you get that combination, the Boogie AD combination, LeBron playing the one, I think that gives you like what we saw in with the Sixers, how Ben Simmons plays the one, right? You have a big lineup. You have a big lineup in your starting five. That is a different lineup than most teams have seen. You know what I mean? Like LeBron at the five, from what it could be LeBron to five. You got Danny Green. You got Kuz. You got AD and Boogie. That is a big starting five. So when you look at that, that unit, right, that is an intimidating unit. Because we see how Ben works it, and he doesn't even shoot the ball, right? He's scared to shoot it. But you see LeBron at the five, and his basketball IQ, it's a special thing. Obviously, like, yeah, in terms of, you know, the Clippers team, yeah, I think it's deeper. I won't even deny that. It's deeper. But when you look at the Lakers getting Avery Bradley, I thought that was huge. Like, I think that was huge because we talk about Patrick Beverley. Avery Bradley's a guy who's been tested in the playoffs, been tested in playoff runs at being a guy who checks your best player and does a good job. He stifles a lot of people, even at his age now. So, I'm excited about the season. You already know. I'm excited. I'm a biased dude, but I'm excited about the season. But, hey, Armand, can you stay with us a little bit longer?
Yeah,
all right, we're going to continue this discussion after the break. Let's serve a sports name.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Listening to the urban sports scene with myself, Wally, Will T left. That's my homie. Had to get out. He had to leave. And Ray Jeezy, he's out as well. But I got my homie, host of the Quarterly Report podcast, Armand Lee on the line. Armand, you still with me?
Yeah, sir, man. I'm still with you.
My man. All right. So we didn't talk about we talked about Brooklyn a little bit, but we didn't talk about the deal. Brooklyn Nets, KD, Kyrie Irving, the combination. I know a lot of people hyped about it. They hyped about it, for next season, but a year after that. For let's go off the year of that. Do you think this team, this unit, KD and Kyrie Irving, you think that can work?
Well, I mean, you are far more optimistic when it comes to recovering from an Achilles injury than I am, mm-hmm. And that's just because history has shown, you know. With modern medicine, modern technology, certain injuries guys bounce back from like it's nothing. Like ACL injuries now are like a sprained ankle. Those injuries back in the day used to be the kiss of death. Micro fracture surgery, that used to be the real kiss of death.
Oh,
you got that,
yes,
it was over for you.
Uh-huh.
But the one thing that has stood the test of time is an Achilles injury, at least in the NBA.
Yeah.
You tell your Achilles, whether you're Isaiah Thomas, whether you're Dominique Wilkins, and yeah, Dominique Wilkins had a one strong year.
Yeah.
And then you after that point. Yeah, one great year.
Yeah, one great year.
So whether you're Dominique Wilkins or Isaiah Thomas or Kobe Bryant, this spans decades now, right?
Yeah.
The one thing that remains the same.
Mm-hmm.
When you get that, you're never the same player again.
Mm-hmm.
And we are obviously in D.C. We hope that's not the case with John. And as a fan of the NBA, I hope that's not the case for Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
The problem is, I wouldn't bet any money, let alone $140-some-odd million on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, if you tell me that Kevin Durant comes back at even 90% of 80% of his former self,
yeah.
But sure, Kevin Durant was in the running as being the greatest, the best player in the league right now,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
When he's out, he was right there. However, if he comes back and he's not the same, and he's a shell of his former self, then remember, it's not just the injury. Kevin Durant is now in his 30s now, right?
Yeah.
And by the time he plays again, he'll be 32, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's right around. Everybody had LeBron. You know what I'm saying? LeBron, Duncan, and Jordan are the only players that I can recall who hit 32, and they still are fine. Like,
yeah.
The decline doesn't come. Maybe Kevin Durant can be that. But when you factor in not only age, but then also health concerns, I don't know. I hope that Kyrie and Kevin Durant work, and I think he could if Kevin Durant is healthy. But if he's not, Then we go on to, can Kyrie truly be a leader, be a true leader day in and day out? I think he's got the talent to do so, but everything else that surrounds Kyrie puts all that into question. I hope the Nets are really good because I think it's fun, and my Knicks are awful. So it's good to have a fun team in New York on that stage. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I hope Durant and Kyrie Irving work. I just wouldn't bet money on it.
It's, you know what? I mean, you mentioned, see, the only player, see, I'm not even going to, like, the players. There's one player that kind of surprised me, like Rudy Gay, right? Like Rudy Gay after the Achilles,
yeah,
still got his bounce. Like that was my thing looking at modern medicine, like where we are today. Like you told me Rudy, because Rudy Gay is based off athleticism, like, right? His game, you look at it, is based off athleticism. And like when he bounced back from his, and I'm not saying that he's the same dude in terms of his, I mean, the level of how high he can jump, right? But he's still athletic, you know what I mean, with having that injury. And I'm thinking about Kevin Durant, and when I think about Kevin Durant, I'm like, yo, like, I'm with you. I'm like, will he truly bounce back? Because he is based on skill and athleticism and that quick first step, right? Because he had a quick first step.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's important. Like, we talk about wall. We talk like this. That's important. And we're talking about a quick first step. Will he still have that? I mean, he's still blessed with that height, you know, and that smooth jumper, right? And you could think that he can play around with it. But at the same time, like, that first step made him so lethal, man. Like, so lethal. You know, so that's my thing. And even that, so even if Kevin Durant comes back to, like you said, 90%, this is my thing, right? Who did Kevin Durant play with in OKC?
Russell Westbrook.
All right. Russ fought, and regardless of their relationship of being cool or whatnot, Russ fought Kevin Durant in terms of not knowing his place. I know it sounds effed up to say this, but not knowing his place within the team, right? Like, he was supposed to defer to Kevin Durant. Kyrie Irving played for who? Played with LeBron, right?
With LeBron.
Cleveland, right? His issues was like, I don't want to defer to LeBron, right? That was the thing, right? So how you think that's going to work here? That's my thing. Like, how you think that's going to work here? I know Kyrie is skilled and smooth in terms of his pat, his jumper, like how he can create space for his sweet jump shot. But it's, at the same time, ego is ego. We still know in terms if KD is KD, if he is KD, KD's the best player between the two, right? We're not even arguing that. That's just what it is. So if Kyrie Irving is who he's been throughout in Boston, in Cleveland, and we come to Brooklyn, that's a problem, man. That's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think I'll shoot Kyrie a bit of a bail, right?
Uh-huh.
If Kyrie, I think, The Cleveland experience humbled him. I don't know what the hell happened to Boston last year. You know, it's pure speculation. The funny thing is, right, everybody talks down that Kyrie was such an awful locker room presence,
yeah,
and he was a diva and all stuff. But before he got hurt last season, like 2 years ago,
yeah,
remember he played the majority of the season.
Yeah, he bought.
Nobody had a problem with Kyrie.
Nah, no,
right?
Not at all.
You learned nothing about that in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think Kyrie is solely to blame. I think a lot of those young boys in Boston,
mm-hmm,
they were like, dog, I want to eat. And I think there's a lot of blame to go around, not just on Kyrie. So
mm-hmm,
we don't know. Maybe Kyrie has humbled himself. We don't know. But I do think it's going to be pivotal.
Yeah.
If Kevin Durant comes back and he's not that Kevin Durant, right?
Yeah.
If he ain't that dude,
oh man,
then Kyrie, his natural instincts will be like, okay, I'm the best guy now.
Mm.
So I have to take over.
Mm-hmm.
He's part of that mama mentality approach, right? He's going to be like, no, I have to be the alpha.
Mm-hmm.
So Kevin Durant's health is so paramount when it comes to Brooklyn's future, not just because, obviously, Kevin Durant being healthy means he's one of the greatest players in the world, but also the power dynamic between him and Kyrie.
No, I agree. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. We have host of the Quarterly Report podcast, Armand Lee, on the line. So, Armand, I heard your podcast. I was listening to it. You know, I'm a fan of your podcast. So make sure you guys check it out. You were talking about Utah. You even said, like, you threw in this little thing about Utah and Milwaukee in the finals. I kind of laughed. I chuckled a little bit. You said, what would people think in terms of, you know, if those two teams met in the finals, it wouldn't with the ratings, you know, carry. But you do believe it's Utah Jazz is a contender to come out of the West. But, you know, they because they their additions such as Mike Conley and Bogdanovich. Explain that, man.
Well, look, I already know. I'm for those of you who don't know, I'm really big into analytics. I'm big into the numbers. Don't believe the hype. Yes, black people love numbers too. Dog, it's not like. So I'm a big fan of Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, I know you are.
There are not that many players in the league in the Western Conference who can win 50 games without having a superstar talent alongside him.
Yeah.
Rudy Gobert basically does that every single season, right? Mm-hmm. When he's playing there, you know you are a contender to win 50 games.
Yeah.
Now with the addition of Mike Conley, not only is your defense better, right? Mm-hmm. And they already had an elite defense.
They did.
But now you have another... You now have another offensive playmaker. So now Donovan Mitchell isn't the sole offensive creator.
Yeah.
So defense is just load up on Donovan now. You have to respect Mike Conley because he obviously can get to the rim, but he's an infinitely better shooter.
Rubio. I agree.
Sure. So and he's fast. Like you are allowed to do more offensively while actually improving defense. So just the mere presence of Conley, to me, puts them a 51. I think they won 51 games last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they automatically get better. And then you add another shooter, another playmaker in Bogdanovich. And I'm not saying that Bogdanovich is the next, you know, LeBron James. Mm-hmm. But if Bogdanovich is now your fourth option, and I'm saying fourth because I know you don't run plays for Rudy Gobert in a half court, but you have to respect him as a pick-and-roll dive man. Mm-hmm. His finishing ability and his ability to set screens and roll to the rim, he's really the best in the league at that. Think Tyson Chandler in his prime back in Dallas.
Yeah.
So you have to respect Rudy as a dive man. You obviously have to respect Donovan Mitchell. And now you have to respect Mike Conley. And then, oh, by the way, we've got Bogdanovich, who was dropping 18 points a game in Indiana without Oladipo last
year. Yeah.
So you have all of this playing at the same time. You have one of the best defenses. You now have shooting, you have athleticism, you have slashing. I'm not saying that the Utah Jazz are better than the Clippers, especially now that they have Kawhi and Paul George. But, Joe, we saw what Joe Ingles did to Paul George in the playoffs 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, like, Utah doesn't have all the splashy, high-flying players that everybody knows, but just because their names are not on ESPN does not mean that they're not a hell of a basketball player.
Oh, no, Utah, no. I'm with you.
Bob.
No, I'm with you. They got a squad. I mean, they're well coached too. I think they're well coached too. Quinn Snyder is a great coach.
Quinn Snyder is one of the best coaches in the league.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just like I like Terry Stocks out of Portland. I think he's a good coach too. You're working with less, and you can kind of you can make your guys play hard every night. But yeah, I looked at Utah, and it's just hard for me when I look at Utah. Right. I see a team that's gonna compete, right? I think Houston's gonna come a little down. I agree with you with one thing. I think Houston will come down to the pack, depending on what moves they make. I think that obviously, I'll say this. I think a lot of people are sleeping on the Warriors. I think I think people want the Warriors to be bad. Like they want the Warriors to kind of come back to the mean. But I think people sleep on the Warriors, especially. And you mentioned ACL injuries, right? You mentioned ACL injury. I had an ACL injury, playing ball. And like today, people bounce back from ACL injuries like it ain't nothing.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at Klay, right? Let's just look at Klay. If you're telling me, like the Warriors will be in the hunt. You're telling me that you have Klay. Say in February, let's say February. I'm just like throwing a date, a month. February, right? So you're going to have Klay back in February, March. Let's say February, March on the safe side. You have Steph. You're going to have D'Lo. D'Lo. And so, like, that's strong, man. And Draymond. That's strong to compete. Like, this team was good with, like, they didn't have Kevin Durant before, and they still made it. To the won a championship and made it to the finals on a consistent basis. So I just think that a lot of people want certain teams to be subtracted out of it, and that's why I look at when I look at Utah, I'm like, all right. When I look at Utah, do I think Utah can beat the Clippers? I don't know, but see, I'm not even a big fan of seeing how the Clippers. I have to see it all work, but I do expect the Clippers to be where they need to be at. Don't get it twisted. I expect it. But you got to see how it works. Utah does have an advantage because, truth be told, they have pretty much the same mob, period. The core is still there.
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they got
I mean, Gobert and Mitchell are two. They're both in their 20s. It's going to be their third year playing together.
Mm-hmm.
When you add in himself, he's been there now for 4 years. Mm-hmm. So this team is just, I mean, obviously they added some big pieces to their starting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest Achilles heel that could be an obstacle for Utah is Conley's health.
Yeah,
He's up there in age, and obviously he's had his injury issues. But if he's not able to go, you look back at Emmanuel Mudiay and Dante Exum, it's not pretty. It's not pretty.
Yeah.
So
Dante
Utah's going to have to. Utah's going to have to make sure that they patch up their backup guard play, and make sure that they are careful with Conley, and make sure that hopefully, you know, Exum or Mudiay can take a step up, because if you're playing those guys significant minutes, it's going to get ugly.
You know, it's funny, man. I remember watching I forgot which draft it was, but when they showed his highlight reel, Exum's highlight reel in the NBA draft, they always do this to me. Like, when I watch the NBA, that's why I hate watching the NBA draft, especially overseas players. This is why I hate, I'm not going to lie to you. When they show you clips of, or a kid from a mid-major, when they show you clips of a kid, you just think they all world. I remember the first time I seen Antonio Daniels, I thought he was the best player ever when I saw his highlight reel out of Boston. I thought he was the best player ever. Same thing for Dante Exum. I when I saw his clip, I was like, oh, Utah got one. They got a baller. And when I watched him play in the summer league, I was like, nah, never mind. And, like, I'm with you. Like I'm with you. That's the thing. Like if Conley gets hurt, that would be an issue. But you know what? I think Conley's tough. I hate the whole thing about somebody's injury history and just banking on that for a player when the season goes on. Like, I get it. Like, it's a pattern. Injuries happen. Like, if a person always gets injured, then you kind of, they're deemed that way. They're labeled that way. Bradley Beal locally was labeled that way. And now look at him. You know what I mean? So, like, when I look at Conley for this team, I think Conley will have a healthy season. He just fits. I'm with you on this. I'm with you with Conley. And just to your point, like, Conley's just a perfect fit for Utah. He's like the Utah guy. You know what I mean? What they kind of – what the style of basketball they play, right? Because, you know, they play great defense. Conley is a very good defensive point guard. And, you know, obviously he's a playmaker. You know, it's a shame that he's never made an all-star team, but it's a good fit. I expect Utah to be, like, in that four-ish seed. But in the West, that's great. The West is stacked. You know what I mean? Like, it's stacked.
Last year – it was nuts. I think they ended up becoming the sixth seed, but they had the same record as the three seed or the fourth seed. So it was like one game behind Houston.
Yeah.
The thing also with Utah is the only teams to beat Utah in the playoffs the last 3 years have been Golden State and Houston. That's
it. It's true.
So if you look at for the last 3 years in the league, those are two of the best three teams in the entire league.
Very good point.
It's not as if they've fallen back. And the fact is, Golden State and Houston, I do believe, have taken a step back, obviously. And Utah has taken a step, if not two, forward. So that's kind of the whole dynamic, man. Again, we got to wait to see how it plays out, man. But, I'm a big believer in Utah.
You should, though. And you should, man. You should. You almost convinced me for a hot second. You almost did. All right, so my man Will ain't here, but Armand, Will is a Knicks fan, too. And I know he probably would have loved to talk about it. But, are you happy? And I kind of know the answer, but I still want to hear you say it. Are you happy with the direction of the New York Knicks? I mean, they've signed players like Julius Randle. I like Julius. I mean, he was a Laker. I like Julius. I think Zion is very comparable to a Julius Randle. Bobby Portis and Taj Gibson. So, do you like their direction?
I don't like it, but I'm not going to be like, I think a lot of people have gone a little bit overboard bashing the Knicks.
I agree.
I think, again, what I talked about earlier when it came to the Clippers and the Nets, the Knicks tried to do the whole tanking thing this past season, right? But unfortunately, the odds of the NBA lottery, just this was the first year that they changed them. So it used to be the idea, like, you don't want to win like 32 games and then you're far removed from having the number one pick, but you're not good enough to be in the playoffs to be a contender. Now, when you look at what the Nets and the Clippers have just done, it shows you that, you don't have to be a championship contender. You just have to show the elite level of free agents that you are good.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nets show, and again, the Nets won like 44 or 45 wins this past season. They weren't world beaters. They lost in the first round. They only won one game in the playoff series, and Philadelphia was clearly the better team. But that was enough to show Kyrie and Kevin Durant, if we go there,
yo, they're already good without us.
Yeah.
If we go there, you can win a championship. Same thing with the Clippers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Clippers, nice spot. They won 45, 46 wins. They were the 8. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
No one thought the Clippers were going to win a championship. However, it was enough to show Kawhi and Paul George, yo, they can go to the playoffs without us. Imagine if you and I link up. So for the Knicks, they try to go from 17 wins to get the big superstars. And obviously, I still believe if Kevin Durant's Achilles didn't rupture, then he probably would have been a Knick. But that's just the way the Knicks luck goes.
Wow.
You know, I think he would have went there. But if you're moving forward, it's whatever happens with the Knicks. And I don't know how bad they're going to be. I don't believe they're going to be very good this season. But this season has to be about Mitchell Robinson, R.J. Barrett, Kevin Knox to a lesser extent. If those three guys develop, and you know what? I do like Elfrid Payton, so I'll throw him and Julius in there as well.
Those five young players
develop, and I'm not saying they got to win 50 games. I'm not even saying they got to win 40 games.
Yeah.
But if they can start scratching at 30, and if Mitchell can develop into the player, I just talked about how much I am a fan of Rudy Gobert. If Mitchell can be anything like Rudy Gobert as a model, as like a blueprint, then it's about, okay, maybe we have something. But whatever happens with the Knicks, it's all about Mitch, RJ, Knox, and to a lesser extent, Julius. Like, those guys are going to be, whatever happens, good or bad with the Knicks, is going to be completely directly related to the development of the young club.
So we going like, ignore my man Dennis Smith Jr.? That's how we're doing it right now? That's like my dude right there. Like, we're just going to ignore my man Dennis Smith? Like, he's not in the...
I'll tell you what. he was them. I will say this. I'm intrigued to see what Dennis brings to the table, right? His jump shot obviously is broke, and he's got some bad back issues.
Mm-hmm.
But he's going to have to compete. Like, Elfrid is playing for... Like, he's had a one-year deal with a second year as a team option.
Yeah.
So he's competing for money. It's going to be competition all up and down that roster. So nothing's going to be given to Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, if you look at the first 2 years of Dennis's career, you compare it to D'Angelo Russell, there are a lot of similarities there. D'Angelo is a better passer, obviously. Dennis is a better
athlete,
rebounder, and defender. So, and he gets it a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So if Dennis can stick the shot, I do think that there is some potential there, but again, I'm more in the show and prove category myself.
Yeah, I like, so all right. So this is gonna probably, I'm gonna be your Flavor Flav for this one. I'm gonna be like your hype man. So I like the Knicks. I like what the Knicks are doing. I actually love it. And what I want the Knicks to do is, like, cause I, you know, again, you know, I'm a Lakers fan. I grew up like a real Lakers fan. I was there through the Saddle 3. When Magic retired, Saddle 3, and I was there when, you know, the young Knicks, my next Eddie Jones squad. So when I look at a young team, I kind of get enamored with a young team. Like, and I like when Pete, when I like when an organization or, you know, a coach says, you know what, I'm gonna roll my young five, right, and I'm gonna let them work, and I'm gonna let them grow, and I'm gonna let them do what they need to do to become better basketball players. That is my goal for the New York Knicks. Like, I want the Knicks to go into next season. I know you're trying to sign people just to sign people. I get it. You know, whatever. Some people, like Bobby Portis, I don't think he should be in your future plans. But hey, whatever. Whatever.
Right.
We're looking at Taj Gibson. He shouldn't really get that. To me, he's a guy that he should come off the bench and shouldn't get any burn in terms of, like, as a starter. Like, he should get his burn as a bench player. Like, I want to see Mitchell Robinson get start at the five. Like, I want to see it. Screw it. You know, if he has to put on weight, well, he'll have to learn about that. Whatever. I want to see him at the five. Julius Randle at the four. Right. Like, I want to see Knox. I want to see Knox start. Like, I want to see R.J. Barrett start. I want to see Dennis Smith Jr. I want this mob to get that chemistry, right, and that belief, you know what I'm saying, and knowing that they're on the upward, not the downward spiral. Like, they're on the upward spiral. They're going up. So I want to see that, like, because they have the ability. They have everything you want in terms of talent, right? And that's my thing, in terms of talent, and they have athleticism, and they can switch, because you mentioned Mitchell Robinson. He can switch, and he's a rim protector. There's a lot of things that when you watch that Knicks team, you're like, you know what? If they grow together, they can do it. You know what I mean? And then you built this team in the draft. So I'm just saying, like, when I watch this Knicks team, when I watch what the Knicks are doing, and I watch Summer League, and I was impressed with Summer League, I sat and watched Summer League, and I was like, yo, they got a bunch of talent. Like, they have a boatload of talent. And I mean, even mention tier. I even mentioned Tier, who's a good defender, and he gets buckets. They got a talented squad.
Well, you got to be careful when you evaluate using Summer League.
Maybe no, but you know what I mean, though. I mean, I'm not to that, not like, I'm not saying like no Kwame Brown Summer League type thing. I'm talking individual skill. I'm not talking about W's, individual skill. That's what I'm talking about. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, honestly, I mean, Mitchell obviously can defend as a rim protector, but he fouls a lot, so I don't know how many minutes he's going to play.
I know he does.
I think Taj will be the backup center to provide some type of veteran leadership, to be some type of mentor to Mitch. I doubt that he starts, but he can still contribute defensively. But outside of Mitch, Taj, and possibly Elfrid Payton, because he's hit or miss defensively, his reputation is a bit stronger as a defender than the reality shows. But we don't have anything to defend. Like Julius can't defend. Problem with Knox, and Knox is still a kid. I still have a little bit of hope. He had an awful rookie season, but he was put in a predicament where he shouldn't have been. Mm-hmm. He's still 19 years old, and he was taking the lion's share of the offensive possessions. That just wasn't a recipe for success.
But
ideally, Knox is a power forward, a stretch forward.
Yeah.
And you can't play Julius at the five. He's also like a undersized four. So I don't know if you can play Knox and Julius at the same time. You know what I mean?
You don't think so? You said defensively?
Defensively, this is going to be mess.
Oh, okay. I got you. I got defensively. Okay, I got you. Because I was like, I'm looking at Knox and I'm like, I think he can be the dude. To be honest with you, I think he can be the dude. Even more than RJ Barrett. Like, I think Knox can be the dude. Like, I watch him, I'm like, I know it's, because I watched him Summer League last year, and I watched him Summer League this year. Improvement. Like, it's all about improvement. When you watch a basketball player, it's all you want to see is improvement. Especially a young guy. A young guy, you want to see improvement. And I was, like, I see big-time growth out of Knox. Like, good shooter. And you can see the drive to be great. Now, you can see the drive, like, right? You can see it. So, when I watch Knox, I'm like, and you know RJ Barrett. Because you see the potential of RJ Barrett, what he could be. I like this team. Like I like Dennis Smith Jr. I'm like, I know I'm the minority. I like Dennis Smith Jr. in this discussion. You know what I mean? But I like this. I think this team has a lot of potential. Like I do. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not gassing you up because you're on the show and you're a homie. I'm just being real. Like I like what the Knicks are doing. I mean, not every team is going to be like, not every team wants to, you know, buy free agents or buy players. There's nothing wrong with having homegrown players help you become into a contender. You know, the Warriors did it.
No, you're right. I mean, ideally, our young players have a lot to show and prove, right? The potential only gets you but so far. At some point, you got to put it together. Again, Knox is a pup. He's still 19. Mm-hmm. He's still a kid. He can shoot. The one thing he showed us last season was that his 3-point shot is respectable.
Yeah, it is.
So you expect a continued growth there, and he started at a high level. But his shot distribution is all off. He doesn't finish through contact well. He gets to the line, so that's a positive, but he can't pass, doesn't rebound, he doesn't get steals. There's just so much that he needs to work on, including knowing what shots are good and what shots are bad. And then when you look at RJ, he's got everything you'd want. I mean, obviously, he still has to work on his shot, too, but that's something that can be fixed. But his biggest thing is going to be shot distribution as well.
Yeah.
He's got that maple mop. And like I watched the first Summer League game, and I was like, okay, this is what he's going to do.
Yeah.
He's going to pull up shots.
You already know.
but he's got great body control. He can go absorb contact and finish at the rim, so hopefully that's where coaching comes into play.
Yeah.
Get in his head, like, don't take these crazy shots and get to the rim. Get to the rim, get to the foul line, get these easy buckets. But again, it's a process. So the potential is there. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. It's about now they realize it.
All right, so I'm gonna ask you this question. I was actually rapping into Will about the Knicks before the show, way before the show, and I was like, I mean, I told him I like this. I like the talent of the Knicks squad, but also I said, like, are you a believer in Fizdale as a coach? Because I'm like, before, and I just want to add this, because I think a lot of people like him because of, lack of a better term, his swag. But I'm really, like, for me as a coach, there's something about him I'm not a big fan of with young guys. But maybe you think differently.
Well,
I think the jury is out. We'll have to see. I mean, last year was his first year, and last year it was clear. We were all about the tank.
So it's really hard to decipher
much from last season, because last season we weren't trying to win. And it was obvious. He comes from a good pedigree. He comes from that Miami Heat culture. Look at Spo and Pat Riley. You know, that they come with a certain level of cachet. So I do like that. And when you look at his first year in Memphis, they were very successful despite all the injuries.
Yeah.
Now, they had more talent than we did, right? They had the aforementioned Mike Conley. They still had Gasol when he was, you know, still close to his prime. So it's a different dynamic. But the last time the Grizzlies were any good, it was when Fizdale was their coach, and he was in his first year. So I'm not sold that he's a great coach. I'm not sold that he's even a good coach. But he's done enough to buy the benefit of the doubt. We will see a lot from this year. So I hold out judgment.
Yeah, because I had an issue, like, even in Memphis, he had, like, Randolph on the bench, and he benched, because I had a lot of issues with him. But you know what? You're right. The jury's still out on him. I'll give him that. But something about him, like, as a coach, kind of rubs me the wrong way. But, Armand, before I let you go, what, other than the moves we mentioned in terms of the NBA offseason, which other moves were you a fan of?
So, yeah, I was a big fan, obviously, of the Mike Conley trade.
Of course, I thought that was
pretty big for Utah. Obviously, if you could sign Kawhi Leonard and get Paul George, that's a huge tip in your cap. But if you were just to remove, like, the huge big names, big signings, I think the Grizzlies, another young team, they positioned themselves really well. I like the Brandon Clark draft pick. Obviously, John Morant was a slam dunk.
I love John Morant.
And they've done some really, really sharp moves. They're going young. They're building with their young players, as they should. I really like Indiana going after Malcolm Brogdon. Didn't cost them the max. And you potential have two really, really great defensive guards when Depot comes back with Brogdon. And I think ultimately, you know, we've just lived through everyone going after Kevin Durant for a full year. Everybody was eyeing KD's free agency. Everybody was eyeing Kawhi Leonard's free agency for 2 years. And now everybody in the NBA, there are 30 teams, 29 teams have now put their focus, shifted their focus to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Because everybody is waiting for the summer.
I'll be honest. Yeah.
And I tell you, if the Milwaukee Bucks do not win a championship, because it is wide open, it's theirs for the taking. And if they don't win because they were cheap and did not offer a contract to Malcolm Brogdon, they will rule the day. Because I promise you, Giannis is on the clock. And if they do not make a finals appearance, I don't know if it's going to take a championship, but I damn sure believe it's going to take a finals appearance. If they don't make it to the NBA finals, you can bet your bottom dollar that Giannis will be leaving Milwaukee in 2021.
I hope
he's playing the Jay-Z and the Frank Sinatra and the Nas. The Biggie, you understand? I hope he comes to New York, baby.
It could definitely happen. I mean, Giannis is, you know, he's kind of gearing himself to mainstream, to be honest with you. I could see it. I could definitely see it. You weren't a big fan of, it's crazy, because I actually like what Boston did, letting Kyrie go and getting Kemba. I think he's more coachable. I liked it. I think it's a good fit for what they do as an offense. You know, Isaiah. And then you get Kemba or Kyrie, another, you know, a guy who can create on his own. And then I actually like Enes Kanter going to Boston, because you're gonna lose Al Horford. You might as well pick up another post player.
Nah, I hated Boston's offseason, man.
My man kept it 100 with me. I hated Boston's offseason, man. I just hated it.
Every single thing Kemba is good at, Kyrie is better. Everything that Kyrie struggles with, Kemba struggles too.
Yeah, I know.
I like Kemba. Don't get me wrong. I like him as a player. He's a really good player. He's made himself into an all-NBA player. That is something to be said for that type of work ethic and stick-to-itiveness and dedication. But there is a massive difference between playing in Charlotte, where nobody cares about the professional basketball, and Kemba has carte blanche. He has the green light. No matter who his coach
sure
is,
does.
He takes the shot. No matter how good he's always been the best player on his team. He's a walking green light. He's now playing on a team where we don't know if he's the best player. And his coach is going to ask him to do something that he's not accustomed to doing. And he's playing the bright lights of Boston, where they expect a lot from their players. So he's never dealt with the pressure
He's never dealt with the media as a professional. He's dealt with the press in, obviously, in college.
Mm-hmm.
But he's never dealt with the press, the media, and the fact that he may not be his team's best player. So I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what happens when it comes to Kemba. I'm interested in seeing what happens. But yeah. Kemba Walker's not a better player than Kyrie Irving.
No, no, he's not. No, he's not. He's not.
Boston lost Al Horford.
Yeah, agreed.
And one of their defensive players.
I agree.
Dennis Kanter is also a defensive player. Dennis Kanter is not the shooter that Al Horford is.
Agreed.
He's not the passer that Al Horford is.
Agreed.
So I think Boston, we'll see how good they love their young boys. They love Tatum and Brown, J&J. We're going to see how good those young boys are this year because it's time for them to step up.
No, I'm with you. I mean, I'm with you in terms of what I'm saying about Kemba, it's not that he's a better player than Kyrie. I think Kyrie's a better player than Kemba in terms of skill. Like, right? We're just talking about flat-out skill. But what I think that Kemba is more coachable than Kyrie. I think his ego – put it this way. I think his ego isn't as big as Kyrie. I think that's the best way that I can explain it.
But my point is we don't know.
Yeah, sure. Okay, I get your point.
We have no idea. Because Kemba has never been in a position where he's playing for a championship. Never in his career.
Yeah.
As a professional.
In the NBA, yeah.
Five, 6 years of his career, it has been an expectation. Y'all got to win a chip. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And playing next to LeBron and then playing in Boston.
Yeah, next to LeBron.
Kimmel plays in an arena that's never halfway filled. Forget about playing in a sports arena. He don't know. He don't know what. I mean, look, that Boston media is no joke.
Yeah,
that
it's not.
It's a real bad play. It's coming, and I don't know how he's going to handle it.
But I mean, my thing is, if he humbles himself, because I don't, you never hear Kemba talk, so it's not like I can tell you that Kemba, is talking to the media. And you're right. You know, when you have a media like Boston, they're going to force you to say something, and then he may say the wrong thing. So who knows, right? Who knows? Because Kyrie fell prey to that too. But.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a believer. Like I'm a believer in Brad Stevens as a coach, and I just think that certain personalities, certain. You know, characters don't mix and mesh. And I'm just not sure. Like, to me, Kyrie didn't mesh well with Brad Stevens. But I think Kemba could, though. Like, I've watched Kemba and I'm a Georgetown fan. I watched Kemba and, UConn do damage against the Hoyas in the Big East. I've watched enough of Kemba in the league. Like, Kemba has built himself. You're right. He's a hard-working dude. He's built himself to this way. He didn't have a jumper coming into the NBA. He's made his jumper better, right? Kemba is a guy to me that can be coached by Brad Stevens. And to your point, if, say, Tatum and Brown, like, they're the better players than Kemba, I don't think Kemba wouldn't have an issue deferring to them. I guess that's my thing. I don't think he would have an issue. We don't know that. You're right, though. We don't know. You're right.
Completely conjecture because Kemba has never deferred to any of his teammates.
True. That is so true. This is
Kemba's in his 10th NBA season going on 11.
Mm-hmm.
Kemba went to school for, 3 years? So Kemba's older than Kyrie.
Yeah.
You know, so don't know what Kemba – what's the old thing? You can't teach old dogs new tricks.
Mm-hmm.
My whole point with Kemba is it's cool to say, yo, he's going to be more coachable. It's cool to say that he's not as big of a distraction as Kyrie. But the point I'm making is we don't know because no one pays attention to Charlotte.
So true. Like, who cares about Charlotte?
You know, it's literally like stepping in from the minors to the majors. From going to the Hornets to the Celtics.
Yeah, it's like Terry Rozier, man. That's why in Charlotte, nobody going to care about him anymore. Hey, Armand, man. Thanks for being on, man. Before I let you go, let my listeners know about the podcast. Again, y'all got to check out the podcast. It went down today, so make sure you check it out. It was a great show.
Nah, man, I appreciate you, man. Every Tuesday, we do sports, basketball, boxing, entertainment, music, you name it, man. We all over it on the Quarterly Report podcast. Make sure you download and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever else you listen to podcasts, we are there. Man, check me out, man. We do sports similar to, just like Urban Sports Scene, man. We bring a different dynamic. We bring a different flavor, but we're intelligent and entertaining, man. So check me out each and every Tuesday, man. We just dropped episode 109 today, 110 next Tuesday. Check me out, man, from the beginning all the way to now, the Quarterly Report podcast.
Again, make sure you check his show out, man. You had Ben Standing on from the Athletic D.C., right?
Yeah, this season Ben Athletic D.C. So,
So make sure you check it out. Make sure you subscribe to it ASAP. Rate it. Do it all. Do all podcasts, good things to it. All right, man. Thanks again, my man.
Nah, man. Anytime, Wally.
All right, man. Much appreciated. Again, that's my man, Armand Lee, host of the Quarterly Report podcast. So, again, make sure you check it out, man. Armand's a cool dude. But it's time to wrap this show up, man. Great show. I want to thank my man, Troy. And I want to thank Troy Halliburton from Truth About It, Washington Wizards Insider. And, again, I want to thank my man, Armand Lee, host of the Quarterly Report podcast. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Saint for ages. You dig? Deuces. Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie. Thank you.